Hello, welcome to episode 32 of the Skilled Trades Playbook. I'm your host, Juan Caruso, author of the At Your Best book series. In this episode of the Skilled Trades Playbook, I have the third of my conversations with the tattooed electrician, Donnie Metcalf. We follow up our last episode where we discussed becoming and succeeding as an electrician in the electrical trade. This episode is focused on the journey level, how you differentiate yourself at the journey level, how you can turn yourself into an indispensable employee for any employer, and how you can start preparing yourself for the inevitable downturn in the economy or in business that comes every few years. We've been experiencing a good 10 years of positive growth in the economy, and ultimately there will be a downturn at some point. As you're listening to this episode, please consider other questions you might have for us to cover in these conversations with the tattooed electrician. We'd love to get your feedback, your guidance on where you want us to take these conversations. Enjoy. So, Donnie, this is the third episode of the Conversations with the Tattooed Electrician, and that brings us to the journey level of the career path of becoming an electrician. And given the versatility, the number of options available to anybody pursuing a career in, as an electrician, I think this conversation, we can take it almost any direction we want, but it really I think would be very interesting to talk about the options available, what it takes to become a journeyman, how to differentiate yourself as a journeyman or at the journey level, and how to really use this as your platform for building a forever career that future proofs you, your family, your life, your future, in ways that a lot of other careers can't do.
Well, I think that's that's a fantastic point, because at the journey level is when things genuinely start to change for the electrician as a career. Because up until, not that we really stop learning, because the learning process is an ongoing process. It never stops. I mean, 28 years deep, I'm still learning things daily, literally on a daily basis. So. But for the most part, you've been learning in most regions of the U.S. It's 8,000 hours, so that's 4 years you've been learning. Usually, it depends on the state, but usually there's an exam that's accompanied with becoming a journeyman. So you have to schedule an exam and take an exam. Of course, you have to pass your exam. And once you do pass the exam, okay, where do we go now? And like you'd said earlier, it's endless. It is absolutely endless the directions you can take. There are residential electricians, which wire up the houses that we live in. There are commercial electricians, which do all of the, we'll call it public buildings, let's say restaurants or warehouses, the public buildings, things of that nature. Of course, then you also have your industrial electricians, which handle, you know, refineries and large plants, that manufacturing plants. So those are your three basic divisions. And within those divisions, you could split it up even more. As far as residential, you know, you could cut it down into, do you want to do single family dwellings or multifamily dwellings or apartment buildings or high rise apartment buildings? You can break them down even into custom homes. There are huge, you know, the 5, 6, 7, 10,000 square foot custom homes that have just a remarkable amount of electrical work and top end, top notch electrical work. Some of the larger houses just have fantastic things in them. From specialty lightings to theater systems, custom, fish tanks and swimming pools. So the options in the residential end are just awesome. And then if you take into commercial, which probably I will say where the bulk of your electrical trade is, which again is just all the public stuff, your restaurants and your warehouses, and there's just such a multitude of things to get into. You run into just all different kinds of electrical work, from running conduit to pulling your telephone cables for the data, to installing fire alarm systems that protect the buildings and the people within the buildings in case the fire or something like that happens, to complex lighting systems for some of your sporting arenas or event centers and hotels that they have hugely complex intricate lighting and sound systems that are generally handled by the electricians. And it is an absolutely endless source of work that you can break it down even further within there to, do you enjoy as an electrician working on the heavy, rough and tough stuff, the distribution, we're talking the large conduits and the large feeder cables and the large panels that need to distribute the electricity throughout the whole building. Or maybe they're into the branch circuitry end of it, to running the individual receptacles and the lighting switches throughout the whole building. Or you could turn into a more of a lighting based electrician to where, you're installing the specialty oddball intricate fixtures that require different types of dimming, and it's just endless. So the minute that you pass your electrical exam, I mean, you step on the gas pedal and you're going.
How much commonality is there for somebody from my perspective? I'm aware of the trade. I just don't know what the trade is at that detailed level. So I don't understand the ability to go from, say, residential to marine. All of a sudden, I get a bug up in my ear that basically says I want to go into dealing with the electrical systems on marine platforms. How is there a big learning curve to consider that, or just because you're aware of the underpinnings, you're able to transfer the same set of skills from one specialty to the other? How specialized are the specialties?
Well, it's good that you mentioned that. They are special, and it takes a different breed of electrician to do the different specialty systems located within the electrical industry. Now, for the most part, a black wire is a black wire.
You said something interesting. Dig a little bit further into that different breed for different specialties. I'd be interested in understanding that, from at least from your perspective, what those different breeds look like.
Well, again, if you're in the residential, a residential application, you can be a residential electrician, or you can choose to specialize, via, if you work for a particular company, or you have a particular interest in doing really custom homes, let's say. Again, a piece of Romex is a piece of Romex, but what you do with that Romex and how you apply it would differentiate, between, a custom home electrician as opposed to a tract home electrician. A tract home electrician, it's, you got a plug every 12, well, it's 12 feet in between plugs, or every, 6 feet. It's the same thing, and you run a piece of Romex from the light switch up to the box in the ceiling, and then you have a service and so on and so forth. But you get into some of the custom homes, and it takes a special different type of electrician, because your lighting fixtures are going to potentially be different. And so you're going to need to know more of the backing and how much the fixture weighs and how it's going to hang up there is dependent on how you're going to mount your box and what kind of support you're going to use around your box to hang it out there. You get into some of your industrial applications and things get really different. Like you'd mentioned, the difference between a marine electrician and an onshore general commercial electrician. Us electricians, you know, green is ground, white is the neutral, black is generally the hot. There are a few other different colors, but once you start looking into let's say marine electricity, the concept is reasonably the same. The concept doesn't change as far as electrons moving back and forth and things like that, but the application changes. Your voltages are going to change. If you're working on foreign soil as opposed to U.S. soil, the color coding is going to change. How you're allowed to run things are going to change. The difference between the metric system and the U.S. standard system, all those things come into play, and it's fascinating, the differences. I've talked to some electricians overseas in the UK, and I've had some interesting conversations of how they interpret and how they run things as opposed to how we over here in the US interpret and run things. It's two, the same, again, the same basic electrical concept, you know, electrons moving doesn't change depending on where you're at, but the application of how you use it changes. And it's fascinating, the difference between them all. It's fascinating.
Can we talk about the career, that period of time at the journey level? You pass your test, you have your card, now you want to excel. How do you differentiate yourself? How do you set yourself apart so that you're that go-to person, the one that, irrespective of what goes on in the economy, you always have a paycheck, you always have a way to get to find the next job or to present yourself in the best light? How would you go about doing that? How do you think in terms of differentiation, in terms of setting yourself apart?
That is one, that is another great point. And you said it yourself best, differentiate. You have got to make yourself different and make yourself stand out and make yourself to that employer irreplaceable. You have got to be the one so that they can't afford to have you go anywhere. And what that takes on the electrician's end to achieve that goal is, there's a couple things it's going to take. One is dedication. Two is learning. You're going to have to learn all that you can, and that will most certainly blossom into learning more than is required of you. And by I say that is that you can't rat hole yourself into being just standalone delight fixture installer guy. You have to be able to be a more well-rounded electrician to make yourself irreplaceable. When times get slow, you want your employer to look at you and to know that no matter whether you're digging ditches out in the dirt and throwing PVC in there, or if you're working in a big warehouse and your rack running just a ton of conduit, or if you're working, you know, roughing the walls in and you're just a beast on pulling MC cable, you got to be that guy. So it requires you to focus and pay attention and learn more than you have to, or not more than you need to, but more than you have to. So if they're requiring you only to know this, all right, you got to know this and then some. And that makes you employable, and they can't afford to let you go, because times are going to get tough. I mean, the industry goes up and down. I mean, it's economy for the most part. The construction trades are economy driven. You know, if the economy is bad, no one's really going to want to spend a whole lot of money building new buildings. Service work will most definitely go on. You know, if something breaks, let's say in a restaurant, you know, the oven shoots crap in a restaurant, they're going to need an electrician to fix it. Okay, that's a given. So the economy doesn't really base itself on that. But new buildings, absolutely. If the economy is poor, no one wants to spend money. No one wants to build anything. So for you to stay employable, you've got to make yourself stand out above and beyond every other just regular electrician. You've got to be the one that can do it all and that has a go-getter, yes, I can do it attitude. Can you do this? Absolutely. And it needs to be literally about that fast. Can you hang light fixtures? You betcha. Where's the fixture at? You know, can you install a service? Absolutely. You know, and do your research and at least know the gist of what you're talking about. An electrician is honestly, even though we may portray ourselves better, and this is stereotypical, and I hate to sound it, but a lot of electricians will think that, you know, we are the best trade in the industry.
I've heard you guys say that several times over, by the way.
Oh, I used to tell my students this, you know, who's the best electrician you know? Well, I am, of course. I mean, that's me. You know, I'm the best electrician I know, and you should be the best electrician you know. But you have to know what you're doing, and you have to not be afraid to go out and do some research, do some digging, do some time, put in the time on your own time to learn. You know, if you do just the bare minimum, that's what you're going to get out of your employer and out of the rest of the world you're going to get the bare minimum. So you got to be a go-getter.
Okay, we've been going through an economy that it's 10 years going on the positive. You know, depending on which news program you listen to today, you'll hear that it's either the economy's still doing great, or maybe we're heading towards a downturn. I think there are a whole bunch of folks who aren't as old as we are, who are in their late 20s, early 30s. They've never seen a downturn, and it would be interesting to give them some insight in terms of how do you arm yourself starting today. Say that you've got 12 months before the economy starts turning, the election's coming, all the noise that's surrounding it is going to go one way or the other. Irrespective of what your thought, what your politics are, we have to know that some hiccup is coming. How would you prepare for between now and 12 months from now to be ready and be that person that your boss can rely on, you're indispensable and he can't let you go? Or if he does let you go, your reputation is such that you're going to get a job yesterday because everybody knows that you're the guy that you want on your crew.
That is a very good question. And I can speak from experience to that, to the past times where we've been able to look a little bit ahead and project, like you're saying, look, okay, 12 months away, elections are coming. I can see the turn starting to take place, and I'm going to have to anticipate what's going to happen. So first off, things I need to do is do my research, dig, find out, you know, even though it is from a non-political, dig in a little bit to the politics to know both sides of the platform and to see the potential hazards of what's coming if it were to go either way. And then I would say from there, I would try to diversify my knowledge base of what I know how to do. I was blessed by having a father who was in the remodeling business. So I never was too worried about economical downturns because I always had a backup plan, Donnie's backup plan. If the electrical industry started to go south a little ways, I certainly knew how to paint. I can pick up a roller and a brush and paint houses to provide for my family. I could certainly roof a house, so I could pick up a roofing hatchet and shingle house to provide for my family. So I knew how to do more than one thing. And the same goes for the general electrical trade, is kind of touching on what I was talking about earlier. Be a well-rounded electrician. If you're just the light fixture guy, or if you're just the wall rough guy, yeah, when that economical turn comes around, man, you may be sweating it. But if you know how to rough walls really good, and you know also, in addition to how to install fixtures really well, or how to run feeder conduit, then you make yourself more valuable to that employer, to where, as opposed to them having to pay out, keeping two guys on the payroll at $30 an hour, so he's got $60 an hour he's wasting. If he has one guy that can do both of the same task, not obviously not both at the same time, but he's capable mentally and physically of doing two different independent tasks, then he really only has to employ one employee in those down times. And so that saves him half again of the labor that employer is going to have to kick out, as well as have an eager attitude to do anything. Electrical work is, a lot of folks seem to think that electrical work is glamorous. And you know, to be honest, in some facets, it probably is. You know, when you walk in the room, you know, you look at, you know, the brilliant chandeliers or the really cool light fixtures and go, wow, man, that's pretty cool. But looking behind the scenes, man, it's a lot of hard work. You know, you're sweating, you're bleeding, you know, these things happen. But you have to be willing to put in that hard work. So when the times get tough, you know, even as an electrician with the big head and everything, if my boss said, hey, you know, we're a little slow today, but to keep you employed, as an apprentice, you know, we're going to have you wash all the work trucks. Okay. No problem with me. If you want to pay me $15 an hour to wash all these trucks, by all means, I'll take $15 an hour to wash all the trucks. You know, we're going to have you sweep the shop. Well, fine. If you want to pay me, you know, $15-16 an hour to sweep up, I mean, I'll certainly do it. Is it glamorous? No. Do I really want to sweep the floors all day? I really don't. But if you're willing to pay me to keep me around so I don't go anywhere, and I can still provide for my family, and I can still keep my job, and I can still come back tomorrow by sweeping floors, then where's the broom? I'll do it. You know what I mean? So you got to be able to give.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing is how you put yourself in the mindset of the employer. What's in it for the employer? In those periods of a downturn, the employer is also having to make some big and difficult decisions, and being the player there to help them make the decision that is not one that looks at yourself, but looks at them as a business and say, how can I help you, or how can I work within the confines or constraints of your business to have a job, is something that I think does differentiate you. You know, it does, if you're prepared to think in those terms, that means that you've got skin in the game too, and that makes you an invaluable employee if you're prepared to stay with me because, you know, I can't afford five electricians, or maybe I can only afford one electrician part-time but for the jobs that I have, but I don't want to lose you because you've been so good. You know, you've been great with on the crew and whatever, and you want to maintain that presence. You make it easy for them to make those decisions. I think that's a great way of thinking about it.
Well, to be honest, as rudimentary as it sounds, it's a scratch my back, I scratch yours kind of deal. You give me a paycheck for performing work for you. It bodes well for me. If I bust my hump, I mean, if I bust my butt for you to make you more money, all right, you charge me out at, I don't know, let's just randomly say, you charge me out at $75 an hour, let's say. That's what you charge me at. Now, you're paying me, let's just say you're paying me $30 an hour. That's a $45 an hour delta between hourly of what you're charging me out to the customer as opposed to what you're paying me. Let's back out all the taxes and the fringes and all that kind of stuff, because it kind of muddies the water a little bit. So that's a $45 an hour delta. It behooves me to bust my butt if you say for that $75 that I can get 200 feet of conduit installed. It behooves me to get 300 feet of that conduit installed to actually make you more money. Because if I make you more money, chances are, what are you going to do? You're going to pay me more, right? And or I'm going to become valuable, like you said, to where you can't afford to let me go, so you're really going to pay me more. And you're going to do things to keep me around. So it behooves me to bust my butt for you to keep my job. Because if I make you happy, you're going to make me happy, so I stay. Make me happy, I'm going to make my family happy. I'm going to keep my family fed and keep my family with a roof over their head and heat in the building, you know, in our house. And the train goes around. We can do this all day. So it only behooves me to do the best job that I can for you fairly. You know, I don't want to literally kill myself or break an arm, but if I got to sweat and if I got to bleed a bit, man, so be it. You know, that the trade isn't for the faint of heart. I mean, it's rough and tumble. But we do get compensated for what we do, and it's noble. It's a hard working wage, but worth it. It's honest. At the end of the day, it's yes, I've put in a lot of work, but I can sleep good at night knowing that I made a good, honest wage.
I'll say it again in a different way. I like how you put your mindset or take on a mindset of almost a joint partner for the business person, for the contractor, for your boss, to have him recognize the value that you bring to the table in such a way where if you have employees that think in terms of how much value can I deliver to my employer so that my employer can get a multiplier effect on what he's paying me or she's paying me, I can only win by doing so. And if you have and maintain that attitude day in, day out, you can't help but win out on that situation.
That's the secret right there. Almost put yourself in their shoes when you're at the journey level, and certainly at the journey level, or definitely when you're at the level above, when you're running work, you have to pretend, even though I may work for an employer, I have somebody that employs me. If I'm responsible for that job, be it the whole job or be it just a facet of that job, I pretend it's my job. It's Donnie's job. Okay. It's Donnie's money. I don't want to lose any of Donnie's money. Same as I don't want to lose any of my employer's money. So I treat their money, be it for labor or materials or whatever, like it's mine. You know, I don't want to, if I don't have to spend $50 for a particular part, I won't spend that. You know, if I don't have to expend 10 hours worth of labor to do a 5-hour job, I certainly won't do that, because that means I'm going to lose money. If I put it in that mindset, like it's my money, then I'm going to lose money. So that keeps me tighter on the guys working for me, keeps me tighter on myself, forces me to run leaner, which means that my employer is going to make more profits, which means he or she is going to be happier with my work, which in turn is going to potentially compensate me more or make me more valuable and keep me around more, and the train goes round. So you almost make it like you just said, like I've got skin in that game. It's my game as well. Because it is. I'm the trade. I am the electrical trade. Donnie's electrical trade. All the individual electricians are the electrical trade. It's our trade. And you make it a part of yourself as much as it is as a part of your employer or as a part of the customer. We're all working together to meet the final outcome, which is the building or the installation or the service call of the customer. That's at the end of the day, that's the person writing the check, the person that we're building the building for. And we want to give them as much as we can for the value that they're paying, you know, and if you look at it like that, it's just a win. It's just a win. And we all work together, electricians, drywallers, framers, HVAC folks, plumbers. We all work together for one commonality, and that's the customer.
So where that this mindset that you that you're suggesting that folks take on, where did you pick it up? Did it come from your time with your dad, or is it from your time on the job with others who had it, or something that you built on your own?
A good combination of all of them. My father instilled it upon me, you know, that you don't just go to work to collect a paycheck. You know, that they're paying you a fair wage. You go to work, you work hard, and you come home and you enjoy your time with your family. You spend the money that you earned on your family and potentially, you know, some nicer things if that's what you want to get. But then working with my employers and seeing the between the blue collar end and the white collar band, because I've been blessed to work in both sides, see how that money is spent on the white collar side as opposed to what I'm spending it on, buying materials or things on the blue collar end. And some of it is just literally sitting back and looking and thinking to myself, man, if that was my money, would I spend it like that? Would I do that? Would I slough off on my labor like that? You know, if it was my money and I knew it would take 8 hours to perform this installation of running all this conduit and pulling the wire, would I, you know, screw off and just because someone else is paying my wage, would I make it 10 hours? Is that fair? Is it fair to the customer? Is it fair to my employer? Is it fair to the guys working next to me? I mean, if they catch me screwing off, are they going to fire me? How fair is that to my family? It's not fair at all. So it behooves me again to bust my ass and get it done and get it done properly and get it done as fast as I can, move on to the next task, make everybody more money and everybody wins.
I like that. I like that a lot. When I think in terms of building a career, part of that process it's so critical that your mind be right. You have a mindset that really focuses on what you're doing and why you're doing it and what you're giving as part of it in terms of the value proposition that you're bringing to the table. And everything you've talked about for the last 10, 15 minutes speaks to that. What's your value proposition? You've got a skill set that delivers tremendous value. How do you differentiate yourself from the next person who has the same skill set? It's all about the mindset. It's all about recognizing that you're part of a total economic cycle that has to be, you know, it has to be a positive all the way along the way, or else it doesn't make sense. And so if by some chance you're not a positive factor in this equation, you're going to be the first one out in the event of a downturn in the economy or downturn in somebody's business, or just when somebody is reassessing their business and basically saying, you know, Joe's doing great, Marty's doing great, Donnie's doing great, Juan, on the other hand, only does what I tell him to do and then waits for me to tell him to do it. I can do it without him. I need another Marty. I need another Donnie, but I don't need another Juan.
Well, and that's where I have kind of taken myself, is that I don't want to be there to be any question when it comes to an employer of my, at least my, because that's all I'm capable of controlling is me. I can't control the guy next to me. I can try to lead him a particular way, but I can't control what he does. But all I'm capable of honestly 100% controlling is my actions and my work ethic and what I can do. So I can't control the things I can't control, but those things I can control, I need to control really well. And I didn't ever want there to be any question when it comes down to the nut crushing times. I didn't want there to be any question. I just wanted to bust my butt, work as hard as I can, as fair as I can, without gouging anybody, and just making a good, honest, clean living. I didn't want to make $1 billion. Couldn't care less about a crap ton of money. I mean, certainly I'm not, if you gave me money, I'm not going to throw it back at you. But I wasn't interested in making just a crap ton of money just to say that I did. I got to sleep at night. It's got to be a good, honest wage. And that's kept me humble. It's kept me humble to in industry that, not just the electrical industry, but in the construction industry as a whole. I mean, there's been problems over the years, you know, with folks spending and folks taking advantage of. And I didn't want any part of that. I just wanted to be honest and good and do a good job for a good wage for the sake of me and my family. And that was just the end of it. I wanted to be humble, good, hardworking, and be good at what I do, you know, and enjoy what I do. You know, if you don't enjoy it, what's the point of doing it? You know, they say that you're going to work, that your career, you're going to work more than you're really going to do anything else over the course of your life. So if you don't truly enjoy what you do, man, find something that you do, because you're going to spend the bulk of your life doing that. So why not enjoy it?
Okay, let's switch a little bit into kind of laying the groundwork for the next episode.
Sure.
So I like the idea that we've talked about how the time frame, the duration of your being a journey level electrician can go either for a specified period of time or for as long as you want, and how to differentiate yourself from your competition, how to you know, really become, how to excel at the position. But say you want to start, you're thinking in terms of getting your master's license. What should you be thinking at the journey level? When should you be thinking about it? What should you be doing at this level to give yourself the best opportunity to evolve your career to the master level?
Well, kids, this is where you need to pay attention to what Donnie says. All right, everybody, listen up. I didn't get my master's license as soon as I should have. Now I'll speak directly for the state of Texas, because that's the one that I'm in, and I'm the most familiar of it, and it's where I currently have my master's license. You have 8,000 hours of verifiable experience before you can get your journeyman's license. And then you have an additional 4,000 hours on top of that you have to get a master's license. So that's an additional 2 years of holding a journeyman's license before you can get your master's. If that's something, honestly, that you want to do, do it. I waited and I waited and I found every excuse in the world. You know, I'm too busy. I don't have it in me. I don't necessarily want to run a business, blah, blah, blah. I should have gotten it right away. You know, you've got 4 years, you take your journeyman's, you go another 2 years, you take your master's. It doesn't hurt to have a master's license. You know, and that's probably my biggest thing that I'd like to tell people is that if you have the experience, go out and go get it. Don't be scared to get it. Don't find an excuse why you shouldn't go do it. Just go do it. I mean, not to mention, I mean, in the state of Texas, we get a card. You literally get a plastic card, looks like a credit card, you know, and it's white and it says, you know, journeyman electrician. You get a gold one if you're a master. I mean, if nothing else, it looks cool. You know, you get to throw out a gold one. It's like a gold American Express, you know. But I don't know what did it for me. I mean, I took my time. You know, I was happy with where I was. I was complacent with where I was. Looking back in hindsight, I wished I'd have done it as soon as I could. You know, I enjoy being a master. There's something, I don't know, I personally think there's something chemically in you that changes once you get that title of master. You become, at least I did, I feel responsible for things. I feel responsible for the trade, for the actions that I take, for the calls that I make. You know, when someone asks me a question, you know, I feel responsible, like a responsible party. So I want to, before I just blurt out an answer to something, you know, I feel like I owe it to myself and to my trade to research, to know what the hell I'm talking about before I just blurt something out, you know, to where somebody, you know, gets hurt or installs something wrong, you know. No. So just do it. If you have a feeling of that you want to aspire to be more, just don't wait. Don't hesitate is the biggest advice I could give anybody.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Skilled Trades Playbook and my conversation with Donnie Metcalf, the tattooed electrician. Please feel free to send me your comments and feedback or any ideas you might have with regards to how we can improve these conversations or the Skilled Trades Playbook podcast series in any way. Send them to me via Twitter. You can send them to at AYB Careers, or you can send me an email directly to jcarosso@yourbest.com. Make sure you hit that subscribe button if you haven't done it already. And I look forward to our next conversation. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.